what is your narrative such that it is so compelling that not only you want to do it, but what happens is that as you're going down this road, people aren't just watching you go down the road. People decide, you know what? He's driving in a red Tesla Model 3, and I'm going to get on my skateboard and follow him. I'm going to get in my motorbike and follow him. What is your purpose such that other people are inspired to try to do that thing with you? Not a purpose to, but a purpose of, or a purpose with.
Hello, and welcome to Talks with Sarah No Socks, a podcast about failure and how it's leading us to success. Each week, I sit down on Mondays and share my weekly failures with you, and I'm joined on Fridays with a special guest who's sharing their own story of failure and how that's led to their current success. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's show. Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Talks to Sarah No Socks. This week, I'm sitting down with Edmund, who is the founder of Join the Orbit, which includes all things community, with I Want This to Exist, Locus. He has podcasts, Codeless, Catalyst, Makers. He has a book club. He's doing all kinds of amazing things in the community space. But when he's not doing things for community, he's consulting, building products, and most recently built and launched Launch Stash. He's a former career builder in luxury brands and now creator, chief of community, and just doing all the things. So I'm really excited to sit down and chat with him today. Thank you so much for joining me, Edmund.
Sarah, the pleasure is all mine. I'm totally like chuffed to be on your podcast. Thank you.
Awesome. Well, I know you and I have chatted for a while on Twitter. That's how we met. We kind of went back and forth. And I've just been so fascinated watching your journey and all the amazing things that you've been doing for the community space. I'd love to hear how you got here. So why don't you tell us in your own words what your journey has been to get to this point?
Yeah, that's a really good question. The TLDR of that is the most important superpower I have is the ability to literally change my stripes and my surroundings and just do something totally different. So I used to work in luxury, but prior to luxury, I worked in the construction industry more as a vendor for the construction industry, but I worked in signs, like the sign business, and I particularly focused on the hospitality segment, so have some branching into hospitality. But anyways, I worked in a business right after my undergrad in the sign business. It was great, loved it. I wasn't going to own the company, and I just felt like I had accomplished my mission there, and I needed to go do something else. So I have this thing about changing my stripes once I kind of accomplish a mission that I have for myself in a particular thing. I either have to leave because it's either not fun anymore, or maybe not challenging would be a better word. And I just need to go and test myself in a whole new arena. So I worked in this sign business. Then, you know, after a while, I needed to do something else. I didn't know what that mm-hmm. was going to be. So I went to grad school. And then from grad school, a lot of my friends wanted to do different things, but I settled in on luxury goods. And yeah, the way I got there was kind of interesting. I had to start my own student club in the MBA program, and it eventually gave me the cachet to be able to walk in and get a job in luxury goods. So I worked in luxury goods. I worked at LVMH, which has many subsidiaries, but I worked in the wine and spirits division of Moët Hennessy for about 7 years. And, you know, it was great kind of until it wasn't. And I just got to the point where a couple of things came together, but I basically was just not being challenged anymore. And I just didn't, you know, for me staying to become the youngest SVP of X or the youngest president of Y, it just didn't make me get up in the morning. And so one day towards the end of 2018, I quit. A lot of things led up to that, but I just quit. I just didn't want to do it anymore.
I love it. There's a lot there. Very interesting. I love the fact that you touched upon you like to change your stripes. and that you kind of reinvent yourself. I have had a similar journey in my career. I kind of just kept going back to school to learn new things for the same reason. I didn't feel challenged. Like, it was boring to me. I felt like I had arrived, and I don't like that feeling. So I always like to push myself a little bit further. And I find it so fascinating that, like, that career path is so unique too. I'm sure you learned so many amazing skills starting in signage, you know, then going on to get your MBA, then you're working with luxury brands. So all of that for sure now has merged into the path that you're currently on. But before we get onto the current path, I want to touch on, so when you quit in 2018, right, we're in this, I don't know, current climate of a lot of folks just ditching their 9-to-5, and everybody wants to quit corporate and go out and do their own thing. So what was that like? Did you have a plan in place, or were you just fed up and that was it? You pulled the plug one day.
Oh, no, no plan. I mean, to be frank, was just building up, and I just had a little spat with my boss, to the point I just felt nobody knew me anymore or understood me, or like understood what I like was looking for. And there was no point trying to convince, you know, people. It's a great company. I mean, LVMH is, oh my God, such an amazing company. I mean, the people are just wonderful. The aesthetic, the vision, the chutzpah, like, you know, the hustle. It's just an amazing industry, business, and company. But I just, you know, at some point in my career, I just got the wrong side of the coin. And, you know, I always have this thing where no matter what company I'm at, it's not about the company you work for. Like, that's great. It's kind of like the people you work with and for. And that really affects me more than the prestige of the company or the title of the role. So, yeah, it just kind of like a couple things were coming together. I was coming to a point in my life where I definitely needed more flexibility, autonomy, but more importantly, there was an important decision that I had to make regarding, I don't know if this gets too personal, but it literally regarded my ability to like stay in the U.S. I just didn't get the support that I needed, and had a little thing like a spat. I call it a spat, but I just decided, you know what, it's time. But here's the thing. That was like a... It was definitely a feeling I'd had for a while. I had kind of planned for it, like if I had to leave, am I fine? And I said yes. But the decision was kind of made. There's a feeling that comes over you, and the decision was kind of made as soon as this, you know, thing happened. I thought about it for 24 hours. I called up my financial advisor, my lawyer, like all sorts of things. Actually even spoke with my wife, and like she was kind of like my last resort, because I was like, okay, my wife's gonna talk me out of it. And my wife was like, do it. I was like, no, you're supposed to stop me, you're supposed to like stop me from doing this. And she was like, no, do it, you've thought about this for a while, and you've changed your stripes so many times, do it. And yeah, so yeah, I quit. The intention essentially, I don't know if you'd call this a plan. I didn't have a plan in terms of like where else I was going to go work. I had some offers, opportunities, but those weren't really what made my decision. I literally decided that if I quit, I was going to like not work a 9-to-5 for like 2 years and see what that's like. My wife wanted me to stay not working for longer. I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. But yeah, that was the plan. And then after I quit, just found a couple things, and I kind of landed in no code, because at the time, even within my company, I was somewhat one of the most, I don't know if you'd call me geeky, but I was certainly the person on any call that, even if it was a 5-minute call, I always had a question. Like, oh my God, Sarah, I always had a question. And at my company, it was like a running joke where my boss would say, Edmund, do you have a question? You know, because I always had a question. I always had a question or a contribution on how to like think about something, because I was always trying to think really far ahead. But anyways, the reason I say that is that trait that I have kind of was a bug at my company when I worked at LVMH. But now it's actually become a feature now that I work in community strategy and things like that. So yeah, that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, there's so much there, but that last point I don't want to let slip, bug versus feature and asking why. I think a lot of us who are in this vein have that same feature that we ask why. We want to know and understand and question things that are happening and why they're happening, regardless right. of what it is. Or, yeah, want to give feedback, offer insight. So I think that's great introspection on your part. And yeah, an amazing quality to have and super, super beneficial to anything in the community space. Absolutely. But I think it's beneficial for every space to ask why.
Thank you for saying that. It didn't appear so.
It doesn't, right? I mean, when you work in these corporate structures, it just feels like anytime you ask why, they automatically think you're trying to start trouble. Like that's what happened to me. I would question things right. too. That was my job. And I knew that was my role. I was the quote unquote bad guy in my department. I was put there for a reason to ask all these questions. But it became very uncomfortable because it was like, well, Sarah's going to tell us what's wrong. I'm like, I'm not telling you what's wrong. I'm asking you why you chose to pick this route based on the things that are in existence. So it's a different mindset framing, right. I think, that's missing.
It's perfect. I don't know if you had this experience, but I think what made my situation even kind of amplified or exacerbated was I actually like made a lot of my arguments with data. I was very like data driven. So I was the guy who, because I started at the company as an intern, and at the end of, 7 years, I could say more about a business in a certain geographic area more than probably someone who'd worked in that same space or area for like 10, 20 years. And so a lot of my questions really always alluded to kind of things to do with data, how to like really like use data to take action. I just felt like when I left, I think, of course, the life goes on without you. That's one thing that I love about LVMH is like there's so many like great people. Life can go on without you. But yeah, when I left, I just felt like there wasn't really much more for me to do unless I really wanted to like retire there, And no, it's not a bad thing to do that. I'm just not built that way. It's actually a bad thing kind of the way I'm built, because in a way, like you get to a certain point of success, because like LVMH and that, like the career like did a lot for me, right? Like the house I'm living in is paid for, with alcohol or, whatever. But, at some point you get to like success, I tend to like want to like start over again. I just feel like that is the true, test. So, now I get to do it like literally for myself. And it ain't no joke. It's not the same as working in corporate.
Oh my gosh. So different. I'm so similar to you in that manner. I'm the same way. When I reach a certain point and feel like, okay, I could keep going up the corporate ladder, but that's not really going to challenge me or grow me, I do the same thing. I quit. Like I started in corporate and got so far that I was like, this isn't really great. And then I quit and went back to be a nurse. And then I got to management and nursing and they're like, okay, well, next step is director. And I'm like, I quit. And then like went and did something else. You know what I mean? It's like, so I do the same thing. Yeah. People who don't think that way and their mind doesn't process in that manner totally think we're nuts, right? They're like, what are you doing?
I think you're right. I think we are nuts. I think we are.
Probably. I mean, it's a fair statement. Right. Yeah.
I was on track to be easily like available, like maybe to go on CNBC or Bloomberg. Like my, one of my dreams was to like eventually make it to like, the SVP president role and like find my way to Davos or something like that. But like after I was like, nah, I don't care about that.
I mean, people might be right. We might be a little bit insane, but it's okay. We're forging our own path. So I'm super interested in the fact that you left and your wife was on board with it. Same thing with mine. My husband was like, yes, please leave. Like you need to go do your own thing. So 2 years, you gave yourself 2 years. What was that like?
Oh, it was fun. It was, it wasn't scary, but it was kind of lonely because you're out of the like routine and strictures of the corporate environment. Yeah, like, truth be told, my wife was like, no, you calculated this, and we're good for five. I'm like, babe, I can't not do any, like, I can't, you know? But I think, like, the first 3 months, oh, I just slept every day. Every day. Because I used to, like, I'm like that now, but, you know, but I used to be this type of person, and for better or worse, I was always like on it. If my boss sent me an email, like maybe I wasn't like, you know, 5 minutes later, like on it, but like you would get a response from me, and you wouldn't just get like a one liner. You would get like, no, here's why, here's what happened, and here are all the permutations of what could happen and why we should go do something else. So I was always like on it, you know, whether I got an email at, you know, 8:33 or it was like 2:15. I was just always going. But yeah, I spent the first like 3 to 6 months just sleeping every day. Oh, it was good. But then the other part of it was, it kind of, you know, you do question yourself. It was kind of lonely, and I had this like self-doubt, you know, like, oh my God, what did I just do? Like, you know, I just like quit this like six-figure job, you know? And, you know, that feeling would like last for like, you know, 2 seconds. And then I would go into this next feeling of like, gosh, I'm so glad I quit, because I don't care if I have to sell burgers on a corner out of a minivan. I think I'd rather do that than continue being, because I was unhappy at the time. I was unhappy. And Yeah, for the first couple of months, I just waxed and waned between this feeling of euphoria, having made the best decision, and like, you know, self-doubt of like, wow, what am I going to do now? Like, where is my identity going to come from? Because my job, in essence, was my identity at the time.
So many parallels between the two of us. So funny. I wish I had slept for 3 to 6 months when I quit my job, because I did not. I went into full panic mode like 2 days later and was stuck there for a year, right? Like, oh my God, I quit my job. I'm such an idiot. What the hell? And I didn't take that time to rest. So I'm really glad that you did, because it's so important. And we discount rest so much. And it really would have made my journey much different if I had just rested for a little bit. I'm doing it now, but it would have benefited me much more from them, because I'm in the same way as you. I was always checking my email. And because I worked West Coast I worked on the West Coast, but East Coast hours, my sleep schedule was all messed up, and I, you know, all kinds of different things. But you touched on an important point, the loneliness. I think I'm glad you touched on that, because it is really lonely. You're on an island, and it's terrifying to be out here. And you think nobody else has done this, because it's really hard to find other people who have gone through this journey or going through this journey. And you're like, oh, well, I hear other people do it and they're successful, but what does that look like? And the loneliness has been a big thing for me. Community has been a game changer in that. Right, in finding other folks such as yourself that have gone through a similar journey or are still transitioning, and just talking with them, like, how did you do it? Did this happen to you? What can we do?
Yeah, it's like the loneliness, when you describe it as an island. I found myself on the island. I went to the shore, took my boat, chopped it up, built fire. I burned the boat. Like, I knew I was alone. It wasn't until like I started kind of going further inland that I started like finding signs of life, and like, you know, oh my God, there's freelance consultants swinging from that tree, and like, oh my gosh, there are indie makers building software with no code over here. Like, oh wow, like there is a life after, like, you know, you leave corporate. It almost was a process of unlearning.
Oh, extremely. Yes, 100%. I talk about that a lot, that I spent a good 12 months unlearning and decoupling my corporate identity from who I am, right? Like, because it's hard. That becomes you. Your work becomes your life. And I really tried, as I entered into the creator economy, to not let one thing define me and to not become a job description and to just be Sarah. And sure, I do all of these things, but, you know, I also have two dogs and a husband and I like to travel. And, you know, there's like a shit ton more to me than the stuff that I do on the internet. Like,
correct.
That does not make me who I am. Yeah. Super interesting. So how did you find work when you were ready to kind of branch out and start looking for new things to do? Did you take freelance gigs?
Yeah. So fortunately, I wasn't. So here's the thing. Like, I have this belief. I can't remember. I tweeted about it. But like, the best job or work you can find is, how do I say it? Is the, like, almost like, is the one you're not looking for, or like the one you make for yourself. So I just had this, like, I guess in retrospect, I did have a game plan. I actually just had a game plan not to have to do anything, you know? So I really wasn't looking per se. I wasn't looking for work. I was actually like looking for other things to try, to either decide, nope, don't want to do that, or okay, data science, interested, but nope, I don't want to do that. Do I want to learn how to code? So I spent much of my time figuring out what I could try. And the work, to be frank, it actually just kind of came to me once I really realigned kind of the parts of me that were repressed in my corporate identity. And I let those parts of me kind of flourish. And then what happened was, you know, when people would give me compliments when I worked, I always like would look at them with the side eye, like, why are you complimenting me? Like, what is the bias that you have? You know, like, my wife loves me, so she's always going to think I'm awesome at everything. You know, my right. friends have been with me for a while and they're always going to say like, I'm great at something, you know, but I just started getting feedback from strangers about, oh my God, you did this podcast, like the way you ask questions, your voice, or blah, blah, blah. I was like, what? You don't know me. You do not know me. And you're giving me a compliment? I was like, oh, maybe it's true. And then the same thing with community. And eventually with, you know, community strategy, I just started getting inquiries from people. And then there were some really, like, really awesome people in the space that just kept pulling me into, like, new environments. And lo and behold, you know, now, you know, it's not a steady, you know, I'm not making necessarily what I was making in corporate, but I don't actually think about making that. Like, I'm actually happier. So, yeah, I didn't look for work. It kind of landed when I was ready to really, like, let the full spectrum of myself be present with everyone in my space.
Yeah, I love that. I hear that story so often, that a lot of folks are like, I wasn't looking, the perfect role landed in my lap. And you hear it with other things too, relationships and whatnot. I was really, really focused on money when I first started this journey. And the minute I started saying to myself, money is the result and not the reason, that same thing happened, right? Like, when you yeah. let go and you look in and figure out, why are you so focused on the things that you're focused on, and do the what you did, I call it like the adult experiment phase, right? We're experimenting with all of these different tools and products and career paths, and you're like, I don't know, maybe I want to try this, maybe I don't. I did the same thing. I dabbled in coding for an hour and I'm like, nope, not for me. Hard pass. You know, it kind of just says different things, but then you try different software tools and you join communities, and you know, you go back to what people think is acceptable when you're a kid, of like every day changing your mind as to what you want to be, and somehow you're an adult, that's not allowed anymore. I think it's garbage. But and then letting things settle and you figuring out what you really like and what you're good at, and then letting the money happen when it does.
Yeah.
It's great.
I mean, even in the process of trying different things, if there was one thing I had a plan for, is like, I wanted to go from working in luxury goods, and I didn't necessarily want to work in another segment of luxury goods. I literally like got calls from companies or clients asking me to do work relating to the space I had just come from, which was wines and spirits or just overall like consumer packaged goods. And I literally said no to those things because I just had this aversion to doing the same thing I had done. So money didn't factor in. But one of the things that I did have a plan for was I want to work in tech. You know, I want to like transition myself into tech. I've learned a lot from the luxury industry. Like I've learned a lot about persuasion, the art of persuasion especially. And I was like, I can bring this. I can work in like at a in a partnerships role or like in a business development role. Like I'm ready. Like tell me what you need. Sarah, it was crickets. I couldn't talk to a tree in tech about how my skills from managing, you know, a multi-million dollar business could transition into like SaaS, you know, products and stuff. And I think that was kind of what led me. It felt like I was being dropped down the rung of opportunities, but that was kind of what led me to no code. That was what kind of like what led me there. And I was like, ta-da, like I can do this.
Yeah. Right? It's amazing. Tech has so much bias and gatekeeping. It's insanity to me. I really can't stand it. And same with no code. I feel like that is the ultimate community, right? It took all that away. It leveled the playing field. And I was like, if you can learn how to use this software, then all of a sudden you're a developer. Go for it.
Right.
It's just super nice. Exactly. So did you start right in no code? Or I'm interested to hear how, because I know I Want This to Exist happened somewhere around the same time. So I'm interested to hear how you took all of these things and you created this amazing community and then got into podcasting and now you're building products. And so talk us through that quickly.
Okay. So the way it started after I quit, so this is early 2019, I'm sleeping the first 3 to 6 months. And then, you know, I wake up and like, okay, you got to do something. Like, you know, go out and mow the grass, you know, like whatever, just do something. And I had started studying businesses that I was interested in, you know, taking a part in, which like tech businesses. So like I'd be interested in like Uber or like some like delivery app. And I would literally dedicate like a week to a month like studying. I would drive it. I would pull data. I would, you know, and I was trying to understand like, okay, how does this business work so that if I decide I want to interview for a partnership role, I can walk in and on day one, like show that I understand this business and here's what I'm transferring. Anyways, that didn't work out. Nobody believed me. I was really bad at that. But what happened was when I found no code, I essentially, I had an opportunity I do this thing, I call it intellectual breathing. It's this idea of, you know, like when you're in college, you have an exam coming up and you're studying with a bunch of people and everyone's, you know, getting along, but you kind of find out that you're so ready for the exam when you're able to teach other people what you know. And so the process of intellectual breathing for me is like there's something I don't know. I go to learn it, but at the same time, I have to push it out. That was literally why I started Codeless, the podcast on no code, because I found no code and I was like, oh, my freaking God, like this is amazing. I don't have to learn how to code. OK, how can I learn this as fast as possible? And I have to do this process called intellectual breathing. I did the same thing when I was interested in luxury, which is why I started my own student club in the MBA program at William & Mary. I started my own club so that I could perform this process of intellectual breathing, learning about something and pushing it out. So the club was an outlet for that. So I simply have this formula and I repurposed it again with no code, started the podcast. In a way, the podcast was really helpful too because it was, for me, it was therapy. You know, like, I don't know, there's this thing, guys don't do therapy, they start podcasts, so I did. started the podcast, and funny enough, it was kind of working. I didn't really expect much. And oh, might I also say, at the time I was also part of a community, Zero to One, which is a mastermind I currently like manage and co-host with a couple other people. We meet weekly on a Friday, and we essentially just kind of go into that kind of like this weekly stand-up mode for like no-code professionals, freelancers, and founders. So I, at the time, I was in this group, and I had told the group that I wanted to start a podcast. Like, this was like, I think this was what I want to do. And at the time, everyone was like, yeah, do it, do it. In fact, like, my buddy KP, who I met first, was like, yeah, man, this could be a thing, you know, just do it and see. Like, KP, if you tell KP any idea, he's like, yeah, just do it.
I know.
So I launched the podcast at the beginning of 2020. Yeah, 2020. And the idea for all the other things that came along were literally the result of just doing the podcast. So I Want This to Exist came about because you can't see it now, but I turned around to my bookshelf, and in the split second I was looking at my bookshelf, the idea came to me. First of all, I looked at my bookshelf and I was like, oh my God, I have so many books and I don't read them. I wish there was an app that I could read a book with other people and share my point of view and get through the books I have on my shelf. And then I said, man, I want this to exist. I got to share it. Maybe someone can build it. And then I said, oh, you know what? Oh, God, I just came up with another idea. Oh, my God, I can't do this anymore, right? Too many ideas. So I just literally, I think it was August the 2nd or 3rd. And I know August the 10th was the first I Want This to Exist session that started. But I literally had the idea less than a week. Posted something on Twitter, and by the next Monday, we started I Want This to Exist. And the idea behind it is it's a meetup for people to come and validate, share, or set ideas free. That's literally it. And then after I Want This to Exist, so at this point, I'm in Zero to One. I have Codeless. I'm in I Want This to Exist. And then start thinking of other things to create. And essentially my foray into community was I was essentially like being part of communities or nurturing new communities, because for me, these communities were an excuse to hang out with the people that I wanted to hang out. So I don't know, maybe it's because I worked in luxury. It's not that I'm a picky person, but like you just kind of like, in working in a business where like the prevailing skill set of a professional is to convince high net worth individuals to part with obscene amounts of money, and to do that in a tactical and systematic way that yields irrational results, I just tended always to think about the people I know in terms of circles or like orbits. And essentially the name, The Orbit, which is like kind of like you could almost say it's the holding company for all the things I'm working on. The Orbit essentially, it's based on an idea. I can explain it later. But the Orbit essentially is, it's a consultancy really, but it's just really like a group of assets within a consultancy studio that allows me to hang out with people I want to hang out with. That's really it. I'm just a very selective person, and that's it. So the Orbit, I found out that the Orbit was kind of the overall umbrella. I had Codeless, I was part of Zero to One, and I had I Want This to Exist. Then the next thing I started working on, it's still in development now, but the book club. Sorry, the book club came next, and with the book club, a friend of mine, Colleen Brady on Twitter. She reached out and was like, we had already been talking about a range of things, but I don't know how she did it, but she just DM'd me and said, hey, I'm reading this book. Do you want to read it with me? Like, I was like, yeah, like I want to start a book club. So like, is it okay if I do this to kind of like test it out? And like, she was like, yeah, like, let's do that. And today we have Locus, which is, a book club. We read a book each month. And we meet four times in a month. And now I'm not only knocking out my goal to read the books on my shelf, even though I'm sometimes buying more books, But the point is that I'm actually like building relationships with totally brand new people within a shared context of acquiring and putting knowledge to use. So a lot of these communities that I'm a part of or I'm nurturing are literally like me filling the holes of my life that in one sense I thought like a corporate career would fill. And that was my mistake. That was just my assumption. I'm sure there's smarter people in corporate that know how to separate the pieces of their lives and do it so well. But yeah, I ended up starting to build this ecosystem of things that allowed me to hang out with the people that I want to. And the latest iteration of that is Catalyst, which is a mastermind and podcast I'm working on. There's also Makers, which is another podcast I'm working on. And then, of course, with my buddy Lee Hills, we're building this web app called Launch Dash. So not a lot going on, Sarah, not a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally boring. Nothing happening. And that's all in like 12 months. You've built all of that in 12 months. Let's just tell everybody like it is. That's a lot.
Well, yeah. Successfully or not, but like, yeah, 12 months roughly, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, measures of success are different for everyone. I think when you make that many things, it's already successful, regardless of how quickly they grow or what kind of happens to them. But putting that many things out into the world and really nurturing them and growing these little communities and having an overarching community within a community and all of these little facets, so interesting to me. It's been really cool to kind of watch it evolve. Initially when I put out my little community finder with Helping Creatives, of course I had like 0 to 1, and then I want this to exist. And I'm like, wait, I don't think I can put all of the communities in here that Edmund has. He has so many every day. I'm looking and there's a new one I have to put in here, which is amazing and fantastic. And I love it. I love that you have picked these kind of really specific niches, that you're very selective on who you have in. I think that's really important. And I've noticed a ton of communities, I'm sure you have too, spring up during COVID, especially in the no-code space, but really largely across the population. And a lot of them don't have an application process. But I find it very interesting when folks do, because I'm kind of with you that some of these smaller, more niche groups, you do want to be with people who you know are there for the same reasons and are committed to giving the same as the other members. Otherwise, cannot really be the best space for folks.
Yeah. People need to know, I feel people need to know where they stand and have something to look forward to. And if you can't give them that, you're just playing a game of cloud arbitrage. Anyways, that's a whole other conversation.
It definitely is. We could go deeper into that some other day. So your main focus now, though, is community. And I know you've been tweeting about community a lot. You're going all in on community. You're looking at community consulting. You always want to help leverage people. So what does the future look like now? We're caught up to the present. So what are we looking forward towards?
Yeah, so essentially, the future is, I guess you could call it an empire built around helping people gain leverage, but not in the, again, for someone that's listening that thinks I might be like a motivational speaker, I am not. That is not what I want to do. That is not like, you know, my intention, but everything, all the assets, businesses that I'm going to be involved in are built around this idea of helping people gain leverage. So for example, if it's a podcast, I want to make every episode to where when you listen to it and you hear the story of a guest or a couple guests on the show, you literally walk away feeling like, oh my God, that's me. If that person did that, that means I can do it too. So I want to inspire people to action, and that is one way of leverage. In my community consulting, I have the pleasure of getting to pick clients that I work with, and I love to work on and with products where people can gain immeasurable leverage. Like no code, right? You don't have to learn how to code, so you can have a kid in, I don't know, Mogadishu or in Minsk, literally have no idea of how they're gonna like achieve their goal of building like a digital product, and all of a sudden, because of no code, bam, like the dream is now here. So I love working in ways that inspire people to take action. And then with all the other communities that I'm building, I have this thing called, I call it the three C's. It's just something I came up with for myself. It helps me. But like, I just have this idea about exceptional communities, allowing people to gain leverage. And, you know, the three C's is a way I use to kind of like frame, you know, what I think is an exceptional community.
Yeah. Yeah. What are your three C's?
Okay. So essentially, I believe that every exceptional community has this or should have this. Number one, the first C is context, especially a shared context. So the idea that, I don't know, filmmakers have this shared context of communicating through a visual medium, right? Okay, a shared context. That's what they do. Then the question is like, what do they believe? And this is the second C, which is conviction. And I want you to think of conviction, if you can, in a religious sense, like nuns, you know, in a nuns are in a monastery, right? Correct?
Nunnery?
Am I correct? Nunnery? Oh, nunnery. That's it. See, I missed it. But yeah, monks in a monastery, nuns in a nunnery. But yeah, I think about it like religious conviction. And the idea here for an exceptional community is, what do you believe in so much that it almost even leads you to an irrational like view or perspective of the world? And so if you take filmmakers, for example, you know, I think if you talk to a professional documentarist, is that right? Okay, maybe that's a good one. But if you talk to a professional filmmaker, they actually believe that their ability to communicate in visuals is a powerful opportunity to, for example, change the world, right? So they believe in something. And then the last C is consistency specifically of practice. Exceptional communities come together around a shared context, focused on a conviction that they have or convictions, but commit on a consistent basis towards a practice. So it can be filmmakers coming together, and every so often they review a movie, they break it down or something like that. So there's a consistent practice. Or it can be no coders. Every so often they come together and they showcase what they were able to build in a week. You know, there's a consistent practice. So yeah, that's my three C's.
Yeah, I think they're fantastic. It's true. Communities really need that. And especially the last one, consistency, I think is where a lot of people miss. They just set up a community with the first two in mind, but they miss that third consistent piece. And people are not... Yeah, they aren't showing up, and folks don't know why, but they haven't given them that space or that thing to do every week together or every month together. And you really need that. Yeah. Builds it. Great. So you have talked a lot about all of the success that you've had and where your journey has led you, but I'm sure you've had some missteps along the way. And, you know, I'm all about failure here on the show. So why don't you talk us through maybe an important failure that happened to you and something that it taught you?
Yeah, that's really good. I think one that I want to highlight, how underappreciated diversity in the workforce is, but also how underutilized it is for us to like enable like a better future. And I'll give you an example. And it just stems from the way people view work, or let that view of work affect how they view other people. And I think one of the failures for me, you know, and this was especially early in my career when I was this like just graduated, ready to like make my, you know, own dent in the world. And a lot of times you do that at the expense of relationships with other people that could actually like benefit you in more ways than just a promotion, a raise, a great review. And, you know, in going hard for a long time, don't get me wrong, it's a great way to address the optimization problem of how do I make enough money before I'm X years old. But what it has taught me essentially is, you know, in some ways I was focusing on the wrong things, but what it has taught me is that the key, I don't know, to having what I call a successful life really comes down to the memories you make with the people with whom you have relationships. And even business is a relationship. I mean, not everything has to be like, you know, corny and kumbaya. I literally kind of live my life now focused on, will this relationship have the probability of yielding memories that I'll be happy with on my deathbed? It's very urgent. It's very somehow like morbid to say that, but it just that view of my value, my impact, or my happiness just forces me to treat people a little differently, kind of like, just life isn't just one big optimization game. It's not about making money. It's not about titles. And I say this especially because, you know, I've worked in a business where a lot of who you are or the value that you're purported to have is based on very materialistic and fickle variables that have nothing to do with the, you know, like who you are. So I think that was one of the reasons I left luxury. I just didn't feel I was helping the people that really needed any value that I had to offer. Plus, it got to a stage where I was so good at my job. I mean, from a commercial perspective, I could have a, you know, $100,000 hole in my budget, in my revenue goal for the year, and I would know about that hole at 4:36 in the morning, and by 10:03, I knew how to plug it. You know, so I just want to say, I guess the thing I would like to say is, like, going hard isn't necessarily going to get you where you ultimately might want to be. I know everyone has different measures of success, but for me, I figured that out, luckily for me, early enough to where I could really focus on what matters to me. And I think it's down to memories and relationships.
Yeah, super important lesson. Doesn't sound morbid to me at all. I think about mortality all the time. When I was a nurse, I was an oncology nurse, so I dealt with cancer patients. And you're faced with your own mortality almost daily. Right? I had people coming in that I was taking care of that were my age, younger than me, my parents' age. You know, you're just acutely aware of how limited our time is and what are we filling it with and who are we filling it with. So I think it's a really great lesson. And I feel like the only upside to COVID was it reinforced that. There were a lot of extremely terrible things that happened, but I've spoken to so many people that have been reacquainted with the importance of time and how limited that really is and how important people are. So I appreciate you sharing that, because I think it is something we tend to overlook when we're go, go, go and focused on other people's measures of success instead of looking at our own measure for success and what that life looks like. Because it's not going to look like the person next to you, and it shouldn't. You are uniquely different. So do uniquely different things. Yep. Love it.
I agree.
So if somebody is listening to this, I'm listening to all of the things that you've done and this path that you've woven and are still building for yourself and think, I want to do this too, but they're sitting in their corporate chair, what would your advice maybe be to them?
Ooh, this is good. The way I think about it is, I use this term. Some people call it mission, vision, mission, purpose. I have this term. I call it narrative. And I learned this from a gentleman that was very kind to me like 10 years ago. And people think about kind of like goals in a very what I think is a very kind of short-termist way. A lot of times you ascribe money to it, position. And I have this term that I've eventually like evolved into like adopting, and it's the idea of narrative. So I first think of my narrative, and your narrative to me is, imagine you're driving down a long road. It doesn't really wind, but it's kind of relatively straight, but it never ends, okay? And as you're driving along this road, oftentimes, like, the way most people view, like, their mission is like, oh, I'm going to achieve this thing and everyone's going to watch me do it. Like to them, like, they're driving down this long road and people are just on the sidelines just, like, watching them. There's no, like, it's just like a mission of you, right? But what I would tell people to think about is think about this narrative. And your narrative essentially is like, what is this thing that you will do, continue doing no matter what, whether or not, like, you get the results, right? But more importantly, what is your narrative such that it is so compelling that not only you want to do it, but what happens is that as you're going down this road, people aren't just watching you go down the road. People decide, you know what? He's driving in a red Tesla Model 3, and I'm going to get on my skateboard and follow him. I'm going to get in my motorbike and follow him. Like, what is your purpose such that other people are inspired to try to do that thing with you? So not a purpose to, but a purpose of, or a purpose with. And I would say think about that thing, because for me, you know, for example, one of my bugs was people said I asked too many questions. Very good questions, very deep questions, but just I ask questions. People would say things like, wow, you really understand what someone might be thinking, you know, what they tell you they want, like the known desire or the unknown desire. Like, how do you do that? Or people would say, like, you're really good with people, you know, like, you know, oh, you should be a pastor, a politician, or a motivational speaker, which I will never do. But essentially, you have to figure out what is that narrative that is so compelling. You have enough gas in your tank to go down this unending road, but it's so compelling that other people notice it, tell you about it, and it's so compelling that they would probably like join you or encourage you on that narrative. Once you can figure out that thing, just go do it. Don't have any idea of what the ultimate like goal is. Like with all these assets that I'm developing under the orbit, I never really had this like, you know, pinky and the brain world domination idea to begin with. I just like focused on one thing, kind of filled a void, and then I moved on to something else. And then eventually I found a way to you know, to kind of connect them. And now they sit under this umbrella called the orbit for me. But I never like really intended to like, you know, I didn't draw it on a napkin and like have it all thought out. So I would say the first thing is figure out your narrative, really, you know, think about it. And oftentimes it's something that you're ignoring. It's like a quirk about you that like you dismiss because the world tells you like, nah, this is not important. That quirk is like, is your asset. That's the first thing. The second thing I would say is you have to understand that as a person, you are full of spectrums of your person. Like who you are is a spectrum of things. And it's really important that you understand the different pieces of the spectrum that makes you, you know. Even though I'm a great salesman and I know how to like sell, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars of wine to people within, you know, an hour, right? That's just one thing I can do, right? You have to figure out, oh my God, like I really love asking questions and I'm inquisitive. It doesn't matter if I speak Japanese. I can get along with five Japanese people in an elevator that's not moving. Like I can figure it out. So you have to figure out the spectrums of your personality. And in a way, you're going to end up being able to tie your narrative, you know, who you are or who you bring into different interactions you have with people. Is it the salesman? Is it the mentor? Is it the member or founder? Like whatever it is, you're going to pair that spectrum with your narrative. and you're going to end up having like objectives. Like every time you meet someone, you will easily come to an objective for your interaction with that person. Like you will easily be able to say, you know what, if I forget everything I wanted to talk about with Sarah, because of the spectrum of my personality, my narrative, I'm gonna make sure that I have this objective. And then the last thing is, you've got to understand whatever your default strategy is. And the idea is that if you forget to do everything, what's the one thing that you can do that brings you back to your narrative? So if your narrative is this long road and for some reason you take a detour, right? What's the one thing that you can do that always brings you back, kind of like from the off-ramp back to the expressway, the never-ending expressway? Anyways, all those things I just said, there are four things. There's your there's like your persona, the spectrums of who you are, the objective, your narrative, and your default strategy. I made an acronym called POND, P-O-N-D, and I literally like go through that before every interaction I have with someone. I think about, who am I bringing to the conversation? What do I want to achieve? What's my overall narrative? And if I get waylaid and I ramble or I get lost, what's something that I can do that's going to bring me back, you know? So.
Yeah, that's amazing advice. Really good. And I love the acronym that you came up with. It's such just real advice, right? A lot of times I ask this question to folks and the answer is like, save up 5 years of runway. Start practicing a skill. But that's, you gave the advice I was looking for and couldn't find when I wanted to leave corporate.
Oh, wow.
Like that is what I wanted. I wanted the honest answer of, you have to stop and look in first and figure out who you are and what you want to do, because otherwise you're just filling it with another short-term thing, right? Anybody can like change their jobs and figure out how to do something else.
Yeah.
But is that really what you want to do? You don't know unless you use your wonderful POND document.
Yeah, I think so. I learned.
I appreciate that, yeah, because it's good advice.
I think I learned that particularly because of the industry I'm in. Don't mm-hmm. get me wrong. Like, I love the good stuff, but I got to a point where I learned what was really the good stuff and what really mattered. And unfortunately, mm-hmm. because I was very good at the job I had, I became very skilled in the art of persuasion, storytelling, selling. But in a way, if you look at it from a bad side, I became really good at making people constantly unhappy with themselves. A lot of the reasons people really gravitate towards luxury goods, yes, there's the idea of price, exclusivity, premium, quality, provenance, all that, heritage. But a lot of times people are filling holes that can be filled with these, you know, things. And part of mm-hmm. kind of what made me go towards that strategy of introspection was watching people try to do it with my business or adjacent businesses and never being able to do it. Status, success, mm-hmm. it never really filled the hole. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great advice. I think we're going to end on there. I could talk forever, but I want to be respectful of your time. Where can folks get in touch with you, join the orbit, hear about all the upcoming things that you're doing?
The easiest place, I like to joke and say, like, if I owe you money, like, you're not going to find me in church. I'll be on Twitter. So Twitter is where you can find me, at Edmond Amoye. And yeah, like, I just love helping people gain leverage. Yeah, that's where people can find me. As far as like the projects I'm working on, yeah, you can go to join the orbit. There's a form, you know, you can fill it and, you know, maybe we'll talk, you know, I don't know. But yeah, that's literally it. Somehow like money and material success just happens to be a byproduct of having a very intentional approach to what I'm doing. But yeah, most people, even my consulting clients, Twitter is actually where I get the majority of my business. Like, the DMs are real. The DMs are like, I don't even use LinkedIn. Like, I'm on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn, yes. But like the Twitter DMs, that's where I do a lot of business now.
Yeah, same. I mean, I've gotten all my clients from Twitter. So one way or another, it's just how it works. Awesome. Thank you again so much for joining me today and sharing so much of your journey. I'm really excited to see how the Orbit continues to grow and all of the amazing things to come for you.
Wraps up this week's show. Thank you to our guest for joining us, sharing your journey, your fails, and lessons along the way. If you want to follow along in between episodes, you can catch me on Twitter at Sarah Nosox. And if you haven't already, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review. It really does help the podcast. Until next time, bye.